Good afternoon. I will call to order this remote meeting of the House Commerce Committee and ask Mr. Dockendorf to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
Here.
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Haley.
Present.
Representative Cagle.
Present.
Thanks. Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Lucero.
Lucero present.
Representative Olson. Is excused. Representative Farr.
Farr present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Richardson.
Richardson present.
And Representative Tice is excused as well.
We have a quorum. Our first item of business is approval of our minutes from February 16th of 2022. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the February 16th minute.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon moves approval of the February 16th, 2022 minutes. Any discussion to that motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes from February 16th, 2022 are approved. Today, we are going to have a very robust discussion related to the Commerce Fraud Bureau, a very important and very high performing part of our excellent Commerce Department. We're going to look at three proposals to make modifications to the Fraud Bureau, either by giving them more resources or expanding their jurisdiction or both. And we're going to hear about some work that the legislative auditor did on that same question about their jurisdiction. To start, though, I thought it would be good to hear from the Commerce Department and the Commerce Fraud Bureau directly so that they can explain to the committee what this important agency does, how it's structured, and so on. And we have with us Mr. John Kelly and Mr. Jonathan Ferris from the Commerce Department. And I will turn over to Mr. Kelly first to speak to this issue. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair and members. And for the record, my name is John Kelly. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I am joined by Supervisory Special Agent Jonathan Ferris, who's going to walk the committee through an overview of the Commerce Fraud Bureau. So I will turn it now to Jonathan. And I'm also a Jonathan, so this is just a challenge all around for names, but we'll try to get through it. So Jonathan, if you want to take it away, and I will work the slides through the progression.
Sounds good. Mr. Ferris.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, members of the committee. Again, my name is Jonathan Ferris, Supervisory Special Agent at the Minnesota Commerce Fraud Bureau. I'm also currently the Acting Director. As many of you would know, Mike Marbin, who was the Director of the Commerce Fraud Bureau for 8 years, just retired about a month ago. So I want to publicly thank Mike for all of his good work for the Fraud Bureau. And after 38 years in law enforcement, it seems that he's warranted a good retirement and he's doing well. So the Commerce Fraud Bureau, a little bit of history, is an agency, a law enforcement agency within the Department of Commerce. And we were created in the year 2004. The legislature passed legislation that was signed by the governor with our jurisdiction being crimes related to insurance fraud. And in 2005, a year later, the legislature passed some funding that went with the creation of our unit. So in essentially 2006, our agency was stood up. In 2013, the legislature changed our name. What we originally were was the Division of Insurance Fraud Prevention. And in 2013, our name was changed to the Commerce Fraud Bureau. It's worth noting, as you see, we were originally a small unit within the Department of Labor and Industry doing workers' compensation fraud, but when it was created or at least passed to more broadly investigate insurance fraud, the unit was created at that point. And our agency currently is structured with 22 full-time employees. We're led by a director, and currently it's vacant. Well, I guess I'm the acting director, but there is a process undergoing right now to select a director. We have one analyst, administrative analyst, who handles intake of all of our cases and some of the administrative tasks as it relates to purchasing and those types of things. That person reports directly to our director. And we then have two investigative groups, which are a supervisory special agent over each group. And sorry, the screen here is a little bit, I'm not sure if Mr. Kelly is sharing this, but it popped off, the slideshow popped off. But we have seven agents in each group, as well as there's an analyst and a senior analyst. It's worth noting that our agents, their job classification under the state system is a insurance fraud specialist, but the working title of special agents is what they use. Due to the fact that a special agent is synonymous with state and federal investigative law enforcement work. I'm not able to see Mr. Kelly's screen, but I do have the PowerPoint. There we go.
I think we're getting it back here. Give Mr. Kelly a chance.
Sorry about that. The joys of Zoom hearing. So sorry for the disruption there. I think we're back up. Let me get it back into full screen.
So it is worth noting that our director, the supervisory special agents, and the special agents within this Commerce Fraud Bureau are required to be licensed peace officers with the state of Minnesota. So we have a total of 17 sworn peace officers within the department. And you can go to the next slide, John. This next slide kind of provides an update as far as fiscal year 22 and where our funding comes from. The $1.7 million that is assessed on insurers is a rough estimate for fiscal year 22. As we spoke with our finance department this morning, and sometimes there are still insurance companies that are sending dollars into the Department of Revenue for this fiscal year. So it's an approximate amount of the 1.7. We'll have a slide a little bit later on to talk about that in more detail. We also received $1.3 million from the Auto Theft Prevention Program via an annual transfer. That transfer essentially occurred in 2017 as a result of the redirection of that money. Back in 2008, I believe it was, the legislature transferred $1.3 million from that program into the general fund. For a number of years, it flowed into the general fund. And as we approached the 2017 session, there were some budgetary issues that the Commerce Fraud Bureau was experiencing. And so ultimately, this bill was passed where it redirected those funds for the Commerce Fraud Bureau. So we've been receiving that annually since then. Last session, as many of you would remember, we began receiving a general fund amount of $283,000 that was as a result of the contract increases for Minnesota Law Enforcement Association members. And so that is why that funding, which is new to us, that is why that's there. We also receive approximately $201,000 from Labor and Industry for conducting workers' compensation fraud investigations, as well as we're able to receive about $200,000 as statute allows 10% of the auto theft program, prevention program. We do have one agent who is assigned to the administration of that program, which provides the total amount of approximately $3.6 million for our fiscal year 22 budget. You can go to that. Thanks, John. And so the slide here depicts over the last 10 years, the assessment that is levied on insurance companies, which was back on, I believe, slide two, but is $250, $750, and $2,000 that is assessed in each company. It generates this revenue, which is a large portion of the funding for the Commerce Fraud Bureau. We anticipate, this year, again, we'll be in that $1.7 million range. Next slide, John. To talk briefly about the types of fraud referrals that we receive, just so everybody is aware, Minnesota is a mandatory reporting state when it comes to suspected insurance fraud. So insurers are required by statute to report any suspected insurance fraud to the Minnesota Commerce Fraud Bureau. We receive those referrals, and they generally go into buckets or types of insurance fraud that are depicted here. We'll get into some more specific case examples later on in this slideshow. But as I like to say, there is not much of your life that isn't touched by insurance, whether it's from the time you're born and the medical insurance that covers your birth to the time you get your first car and the automobile insurance that covers your vehicle to when you buy your first home and title insurance covers that and protects you when you close on that home or to when you get your first job and either short-term or long-term disability insurance or workers' compensation insurance helps you in the event you're hurt. Your health insurance helps you through life. And as you prepare for retirement, you may use annuities, which is a life insurance product, but it is a commonly used vehicle for people to prepare for retirement. And all the way through life until you ultimately pass away and a life benefit is paid to your heirs. There is all aspects of our life touched by insurance, and we see that through the work and referrals that we receive. I think one of the things that is striking about this slide is how over the last 10 years, the number of referrals that we've received from insurance companies, as well as from other law enforcement agencies and from the public, have increased. You can see nearly tripling if you go back to 2011, and the numbers are even more staggering if you go prior to 2011. We were up to 3,600 in 2021, in 2020, and in 2021, it dropped a bit. I can say that I've looked into the why those numbers have dropped, and they've primarily been in two areas, one in automobile insurance fraud referrals and the other being health insurance fraud referrals. Well, I think that's not surprising given the pandemic, and overall people drove less and frankly went to the doctor less. And so that nearly 400 case referral drop was almost completely made up by those two areas. So our referral rate has consistently increased each and every year. I think a large part of that is back around 2012 and 2013, we made a concerted effort to go out and communicate with our insurance companies, talk to them about what makes a good fraud referral, but also that the law says they have to refer suspected fraud, as well as making contact with members of the public and community groups and try and make them understand who we are. Because quite frankly, when I came to the Commerce Fraud Bureau in 2010, it was common to go out and talk to law enforcement groups or even members of the public who had not heard of us. John, you can go to the next slide. This is just a graph showing the impact of the cases that we've prosecuted since 2016. We're still finalizing our 2021 numbers, but I can say that we'll be over $8 million for the year. Exactly where it's gonna be is still to be determined, but it will be over $8 million. The 2017 number is significant, as you can imagine, that a large portion of that, I believe about $150 million, came from one case that was investigated where it was an investment fraud case where there was a local Minnesota insurance agent who was out recruiting investors for that scheme. And so consistently, we are working with our stakeholders, whether that be other law enforcement agencies or prosecutors, and ensuring that we're doing good work and that the amount of economic impact is far exceeding the cost of the agency in and of itself. Now I'd like to just give you a couple quick examples of some insurance fraud cases that we have worked over the last couple of years. And first we'll start with an agent broker case that started in the fall of 2021. And just so folks know, the screenshot there of Isaiah Goodman was actually taken from a Twitter post by somebody who was having him on a podcast in October of 2020 to talk about what people should be doing with their money and how they were to be investing it. Well, at the same time, Mr. Goodman was on that podcast as well as some other local media channels talking about providing financial advice and other types of advice. He was running essentially a Ponzi scheme. And Mr. Goodman was an insurance agent and investment advisor based in Minneapolis. And from the time he became an agent, he didn't just sort of work his way into the fraud scheme. From the time he became an agent in 2017, he literally started stealing people's money. And these are the types of people that we worked really, really hard on in order to make sure that we're protecting Minnesotans' economic security, because that is really important to us. But this case started as a result of the civil side of the Department of Commerce receiving a complaint. And so they reached out to us, which is something that happens on a regular basis where civil receives a complaint, because sometimes a victim or an investor may reach out to their local law enforcement agency. Maybe the officer who responds doesn't think it's criminal or doesn't have enough information. And so they'll advise them that it may be civil and they should reach out to the Commerce Department because the person's licensed. So this is what happened in this case. And it was critically important for our civil division to reach out to us, because at the time that this investigation started, Mr. Goodman was actively soliciting investors to use that money and ultimately pay back other investors who were now concerned about where their money was at. That case was opened at the Commerce Fraud Bureau in October of 2020. And by February of 2021, which is a very short period of time for those that know how long normally federal investigations take, but that case was charged in February 2020, and he had stolen at that point over $2.3 million from 23 victims. We partnered with the FBI and the U.S. attorneys on that case. And just last summer, Mr. Goodman was sentenced to 7 years in prison, restitution of over $1 million. And importantly, the U.S. Attorney's Office is working to forfeit the $1.6 million home that he was attempting to build, as well as other assets, because he ultimately used those stolen monies to essentially fund his lavish lifestyle. The next case I will talk about is an arson. We commonly are contacted by local law enforcement agencies to assist them with arson investigations when the purpose of the arson is for profit. Essentially, if you burn a building down and you file an insurance claim, you may be able to have a big payoff. And so this was a case that one of our agents worked with the Detroit Lakes Police Department, as well as the State Fire Marshal's Office. And Gary Bogatz was charged as a result of a 2018 fire where he lit it on fire. And I've got to be a little careful because this case is not yet finalized, but according to the criminal complaint, Mr. Bogatz broke into this Refuge Christian Outreach Center and lit it on fire all as part of a for-profit insurance fraud scheme. It was charged in 2020. And this case is looking to be resolved here through criminal court trial in the very near future. The next case that I think many of you have heard about through different presentations from our former director, Michael Marbin, but we worked have worked on a no-fault automobile insurance fraud case for a number of years. That case is essentially based on this premise. Minnesota is a no-fault state. Many chiropractors and personal injury attorneys have used that law in order to essentially line their own pockets with ill-gotten funds. They do that because they're paying kickbacks to patients to be patients. Or in some cases, they pay kickbacks to individuals to go find them patients or for to go find them clients if it's a lawyer. What that means is your average person could be paid up to $2,000 to go treat with a chiropractor if they say they're injured as a result of a car accident. We began an undercover investigation back in 2013, and that investigation is still ongoing with recent charges just as recent as last month, with a personal injury attorney being charged by the U.S. Attorney's Office and him pleading guilty in federal court. But that case has resulted in 28 individuals being federally charged as a result of a fraud scheme that is tens of millions of dollars. We've charged two lawyers to date. I mentioned the one just a bit ago. More recently, in the last year and a half or so, Will Souter was an attorney. He pled guilty and was sentenced to 16 months in prison. And on the screen there, you can see a number of our chiropractors that we've charged, all of which who either took us to trial and were found guilty or who pleaded guilty for their role in this scheme. That scheme really comes down to people were treating when they didn't need to treat, or in some cases it resulted in staged car accidents just so they could receive payment to go treat and to potentially get a bodily injury settlement at the end of their treatment. Lastly, I will talk about a workers' compensation premium evasion case involving Ricardo Batras. This was a case that was back in 2017. Mr. Batras, like other individuals in his situation, were preying on individuals who were not documented in the United States and would regularly use the threats of deportation and other threats in order to get them to stop complaining if he wasn't paying them. He was not reporting to his insurance company that he had actual employees. And so when his workers would be injured, he either would prevent them from seeking medical care because they were injured on the job and work comp should be covering that. But because he didn't have that, he would prevent that. Or if they did need medical care, as in the case of one of his workers who had fallen and broken his back, Mr. Batras went with him to the hospital and made him lie to hospital intake staff saying that his work or his injury was not work-related. And ultimately, we found that the medical assistance program was required to, or bills were submitted to them, and they paid on that. And so the general medical assistance fund is essentially defrauded at that point. Mr. Batras was charged by the Hennepin County Attorney's Office in 2018, and I'm told that that was the first labor trafficking case. He was charged with theft, insurance fraud, and labor trafficking, that was the first labor trafficking case, certainly by Hennepin County, that was charged where it did not have a connection to sex trafficking, but it was truly just labor trafficking. Mr. Batras pleaded guilty in 2019 and was sentenced to time in jail and probation. All of our partnerships and all of our cases are based on strong relationships, whether it be with the insurance industry and how they report to us or our law enforcement partners. I can't tell you enough or thank our partners at the state and the county attorneys and the U.S. Attorney's Office for their strong relationship, as well as our partnerships with federal law enforcement, such as the IRS and postal inspectors, HSI, or the FBI. So with that, I am happy to turn this back over to John Kelly, and I again thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ferris. Mr. Kelly, anything you have to add here before we go to questions or?
No, nothing from you, Chair. Thank you.
Wonderful. We do have a number of bills and discussions we're going to have going forward, but if members have general questions about the Commerce Fraud Bureau, feel free to jump in now. Otherwise, we can move along. The whole day is on the Commerce Fraud Bureau, so you'll have a chance. Representative Lilly.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the auto theft and, you know, with the auto theft that we're hearing about in the news and the catalytic converters, is that, I mean, it just seems like our commitment as a state's pretty weak if we got 200 grand we're doing in that area. I just, if you could give it a few seconds of thought or comments, or maybe not now.
No, I think I will say, first of all, that I think we're going to have more discussions in our committee about the auto theft prevention fund and the catalytic converter issue.
Okay.
We did pass some stuff on that last year, but I think just to clarify, I think that the $200,000 is just the amount to administer the program. And then I believe they have, was it 1.3 million or 1.7? I can't remember. Mr. Ferris, I don't know, or Mr. Kelly, if you can tell us the amount that's distributed annually by the state through the Auto Theft Prevention Fund, but it's larger than 200,000.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it is, we received $1.3 million transfer from the Auto Theft Program, and you're correct, it is 200,000 for the administration of the program.
Okay. But I think what the question was, Jonathan, was the amount of the Auto Theft Prevention Grant Program per year, which is much higher than that.
Correct. I think this last, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe this last biennium was about $7 million in grant awards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought that we had gone and had a much larger commitment. So I was just, okay, that's all. Thank you.
Yeah, Representative Lee, I think that's a great thing to focus on. And we'll be coming back to catalytic converters and the Auto Theft Prevention Fund later this year, for sure, because you're right, it is a big issue across the state right now. And there's a lot to be said about it. I see no other hands up, so we'll move to our first bill on the agenda today, which is House File 3068 from Representative Lislegard. Representative Lislegard, would you like to move your bill?
That is my motion. I'd like to move this bill for possible inclusion.
Representative Lislegard moves House File 3068 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Lislegard, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Obviously, we heard a great presentation about the issue at hand, and that's what this bill is hopefully going to address. You know, the Commerce Fraud Bureau is a law enforcement entity within the Department of Commerce, as we've heard, and they investigate fraud. Currently, the agency is funded entirely from insurance-related sources. An assessment on all insurers and surcharges on the automobile insurance policy worker compensation assessment. Insurance fraud impacts all of us, as we can see. It makes coverage more expensive for all of us and hurts the good players within our system. The insurance fraud includes more bad behavior than I think most of us really understand. And while the Bureau does a good job and they continue to do a good job, there is a need for further funding and more peace officers within the division. This bill has a blank appropriation from the general fund into the insurance fraud prevention account for five additional full-time police officers. The fiscal note, which was distributed to the committee members, estimates a cost of $870,000 in fiscal year 2023 and $811,000 for both fiscal year 24 and 25. I have a number of testifiers to present today that can give you insight to fighting fraud in the state of Minnesota, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lislegard. So let's go to those testifiers, the first of which is Adam Dunnick from the Carpenters. And if we can try and keep all of our testimony to 2 minutes each, that would be helpful just to keep us on time here. But Mr. Dunnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'll do my best to stay within time. My name is Adam Dunnock. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. Our regional council covers six states in the upper Midwest. And in Minnesota, we represent over 12,000 members who are carpenters, floor covers, millwrights, pile drivers, and industrial workers. And I'm here today to testify in support of House File 3068. Over the last number of years, the Commerce Fraud Bureau has shown an exemplary model of how to hold employers accountable for carrying fraudulent workers' compensation packages and catching other financial crimes that we see regularly in the construction industry. They've also been an agency that has shown itself to be a good partner when it comes to working in partnership with law enforcement, local prosecutors, and other entities. Their work is noticed, and it also helps to stretch the value of the taxpayers' dollars. This sort of oversight has led to two significant cases in Minnesota in recent years against a drywall contractor and a labor broker who was charged also with human trafficking. You heard about that in Mr. Ferris's presentation. I raise these two cases because I want to discuss the work that the Commerce Fraud Bureau does that we can all agree on. One, they level the playing field for reputable businesses. And two, when it comes to prosecuting financial crimes that are oftentimes accompanied by other crimes and criminal activities such as human trafficking, they do a great job of standing up against those crimes and holding people accountable. We see these types of tragedies often enough in the construction world, and we are hopeful that the additional funds for peace officers and the Commerce Fraud Bureau will go a long way toward enforcing the state's laws in a way that also shows good value to the entire state. Thank you to Representative Lizegard for carrying this bill and Mr. Chairman for the opportunity to testify and be with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Dunnock. The next testifier is Octavio Chung Bustamante from La Una. Mr. Bustamante.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Octavio Chung Bustamante. I'm an organizer for the Labor's Union, La Una. My wife is from Panama, and my wife is from Minnesota, and I'm from Panama. I had to review my entire life when I came here. I didn't know anyone. I could not speak English well. Like many Latino immigrants, I found work in the construction industry. I was lucky my employer paid family supporting wages and provide union health, retirement, and training benefits. Equally important, they pay their taxes, unemployment, and workers' compensation premiums. If we were laid off because work was slow, we had unemployment insurance to get us through. If someone got hurt on that job, they got the proper medical care. Sadly, many workers are not so lucky. Part of my job as an organizer with La Una is to prevent low-road contractors from getting ahead by cheating workers, cheating taxpayers, by breaking the laws through tax and insurance fraud. Here's an example. 5 months ago, I met a worker named Marco who had recently broken his ankle after falling off a ladder while installing a decorative stone. The contractor that was apparently in charge of the project, Environmental Stoneworks, is a subsidiary of a multi-billion dollar building supply company, Cornerstone Building Brands. When Marco was injured, his boss, a so-called independent contractor, should have arranged medical treatment and help him file a worker compensation claim. Instead, Marco and a co-worker say their boss tried to pursue Marco to lie to authorities and seek medical care under the boss's name at taxpayer expense. Marco explained that when he refused to participate in the scheme, the boss responded by firing him and his co-worker and threatened him to report them to the police and immigration enforcement. Since then, Marco's injury has prevented him from working in construction, and he faces thousands of dollars in medical bills he might never be able to settle. Today, Marco struggles to survive while the lawyers continue to argue over who should pay the bills. This is not how the system is supposed to work. But I can tell you, based on my experience as an organizer, that stories like Marco's are far too common. Additional peace officers mean more enforcement of the current law to protect workers, law-abiding businesses, and taxpayers. It will make independent contractors think twice before breaking the law and hopefully keep general contractors from hiring some subcontractors that do. House File 3068 increases the chances there are meaningful consequences to employers that are breaking the law. I ask you all to support this proposal. I want to thank Representative Liz Lagarde for introducing a bill that will better serve and better protect construction workers who often just don't know the rules or where to turn for help. And finally, Mr. Chair, I want to remind members of the committee that this issue affects real people. These workers are building our remarkable communities in every corner of the state here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bustamante. Our next testifier is Susan Crum from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. Ms. Crum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon to the members and other individuals who are watching the testimony today. My name is Susan Crum. My last name is spelled C-R-U-M-B, believe it or not, and I am a senior assistant county attorney with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. I'm a trial attorney and also the supervisor of our financial crimes unit, and I also was one of the prosecutors in the Batras case. I've been a prosecutor for over 35 years, and during that time, I've prosecuted probably about every different type of crime you can see, including gang homicides. And as a violent crimes prosecutor, I used to view my work as sort of being like an emergency room doctor. You'd have somebody who had suffered great bodily harm or death. You had a crime that required an immediate response. The crime was very acute, and you had to set aside every other bit of work on your desk in order to respond to that. The work I do now as a financial crimes prosecutor is more like that of a specialist. Complex, methodical, time-consuming, and requiring a deep dive and understanding of a specialized area of practice. Commerce Fraud Bureau is our go-to agency in the investigation of financial crimes. They're specialists in the area of financial fraud and related offenses, and they have experienced, incredibly professional investigators. They also have relationships with federal agencies such as Homeland Security, very important when you're looking at a number of victims or witnesses who could be undocumented, also with with Secret Service. They also have civilian analysts who analyze the financial evidence that are the DNA of these cases, and absolutely essential for holding fraudsters accountable. They also have statewide jurisdiction, and I cannot stress the importance of that authority in our ability to investigate and successfully prosecute financial crimes. Financial criminals are incredibly prolific. And it's one thing to ask a local police department to investigate a case with one suspect and one victim and two bank accounts. It's not fair to ask them to take on a case with 20, 30, 40 or more victims who live in multiple cities, multiple counties. There could be multiple suspects and a whole host of financial accounts with transactions that are made to deliberately conceal the source of the money. Increasing the capacity of Commerce Fraud Bureau through the additional funding for more investigators is a win-win for law enforcement. It will give the Commerce Fraud Bureau the capacity to assist other police departments and hold financial criminals accountable. That funding will also allay concerns that insurance-generated revenue will be applied to cases that, although they're related to financial fraud, may result in non-insurance-related investigations or charges. And I would note that this bill is also supported by the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, members, to testify today on behalf of that bill, and I'm available for questions should you have them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crum. Our next testifier is Aaron Cocking of the Insurance Federation. Mr. Cocking.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Aaron Cocking, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. The issue of insurance fraud is one that we have been working to combat for a long, long time. The Insurance Federation was and has been involved in discussions around this issue for years. From establishing the work, the crime of work comp fraud in 1992 to the Omnibus Insurance Fraud Bill in 1994, establishing insurance fraud as a crime in 1996, establishing the Department of Commerce Fraud Unit in 2002, funding the Insurance Fraud Division in 2004, and most recently pushing for the auto theft prevention transfer to go back to the Commerce Fraud Bureau in 2017, to name some of the biggest, the IFM has been at the table, or in some case, the impetus for action on this. The discussions happening in 2022 are no different. First of all, let me thank Representative Lislegard for bringing his bill forward for discussion. Additional funding of the critical functions of the Commerce Fraud Bureau, which, as Mr. Ferris noted, was established as the Division of Insurance Fraud Prevention, are big for Minnesota consumers. Mr. Ferris touched on the number of case referrals that have skyrocketed in the last 10 years. I think some history is helpful in this discussion. In 1997, Attorney General Skip Humphrey was a member of the board of directors of the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud. At that time, the Minnesota Attorney General's office was engaged in prosecuting cases of insurance fraud. Attorney General Humphrey noted that insurance fraud cost every Minnesotan about $1,000 per year in higher insurance premiums and other costs. That number adjusted for inflation would now be more than 1,700. The role of the Commerce Fraud Bureau in pursuing insurance fraud cases is critical and has been critical to keeping those numbers from increasing even more. House File 3068 adds five additional agents to the Commerce Fraud Bureau. We are hoping to work with Representative Liz Lagarde and the Department of Commerce on specifics of this language, specifically whether we limit the hires to only agents or we expand it further. One of the things that we think would be valuable would be the addition of a fraud unit attorney who could act as a liaison between the investigators and prosecutors. One of the things that we have heard repeatedly is that prosecutors don't have interest in prosecuting these cases. I was extremely happy to hear Ms. Crum talk about the work that's been done in Hennepin County. I know that Mr. Choi in Ramsey County has also done this, but I think for the balance of the other 85 counties, the addition of a liaison would be helpful. It would be of tremendous value both to the Department of Commerce and to those prosecutors. A memo sent to the IFM over a dozen years ago from George Krillis at the Department of Commerce laid this problem bare. Krillis noted that there have been many referrals that have had prosecution declined because the county attorneys say they are too busy prosecuting other more pressing cases. Krillis noted that insurance companies aren't compelling enough victims because the cases likely get little publicity. Finding a way to overcome that longstanding issue would be significant for these fraud cases. As the legislature works to address the problems laid out in the OLA report that we're going to talk about, I know just a couple minutes, the IFM will remain committed to engaging and crafting a solution that addresses the wants of the Department of Commerce while protecting the valuable work done by the Commerce Fraud Bureau in protecting Minnesota insurance consumers. As the organization that pushed for its creation and pushed for our companies to fund it when there wasn't general fund money available, we have a big stake in making sure that all of that work isn't lost. Thank you for the chance to present our perspective, Mr. Chairman. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cocking, for that testimony and that particularly interesting idea about adding an attorney to the group. I'm always in favor of getting attorneys jobs, as you might expect, but I think that idea has some real merit, and I'd like to talk further about it. Our next testifier is Chief Jay Henthorne from the Richfield Police Department. Chief Henthorne.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and members of the committee. My name is Jay Henthorne. I am the Chief of Police for the City of Richfield. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, who represents the more than 300 police chiefs across the state of Minnesota and over 150 command staff members. We support adding additional officers to the Department of Commerce to assist and support law enforcement agencies throughout the state to fight the crisis of auto thefts, wage theft, labor trafficking, and financial crimes. Many agencies throughout the state do not have the resources, training, or know-how to decrease the rapid ascent of these above crimes. Auto theft alone has increased from 3,000 cases in 2018 to over 6,000 cases in 2021 in Hennepin County alone. The Department of Commerce has provided obviously some grant funding to agencies throughout the state to help combat some of these crimes, but we know that additional resources are needed. And the five additional officers added to the Department of Commerce will help this law enforcement trend. As far as wage theft and labor trafficking, Richfield was a victim of that. We were featured in a KSTP Channel 5 case in 2019 with a multi-housing complex we were building in Richfield. The subcontractor at the time was trafficking labor and conducting wage theft. Obviously, as a local law enforcement agency, we took the police reports. However, not having the information or knowledge on how to investigate labor trafficking or wage theft, we called the Department of Commerce and at that time, Director Marvin, who gave us the assistance in how to work the case, work collaboratively the case with them, and submit it to the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, where the individual was eventually charged. Financial crimes are also being committed exponentially as we move through COVID and other social issues. Law enforcement needs resources to handle these complex cases. These cases are complex and present a spider web of obstacles to understand and work through if not versed in financial crimes. Law enforcement across the state needs all the resources we can to work collaboratively with our county, state, and federal resources. We should not be siloing these resources, but need to work collaboratively. We do that with the Department of Commerce. Having worked with the Department of Commerce and their staff on cases, they're able to bring skills and assets to complex and difficult cases that are happening more frequently and can be overwhelming for the law enforcement agency, not only locally, but throughout the state of Minnesota. Thank you for your time today and allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Chief Enthorn. And our last testifier on this bill is Robin Rowan. Ms. Rowan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Robin Rowan, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council, also known as MIFSE. MIFSE members protect the financial security of Minnesotans through the sale of life, annuities, long-term care, disability insurance, supplemental products, and retirement plans. And they pay out over $42 million a day in life and annuity benefits to Minnesotans. I'm here today, like everyone else, in support of Representative Liz Lagarde's bill to bring more and badly needed resources to the Fraud Bureau. In what might be a statement against interest in terms of revealing how old I am, I was here in 2002 when we created the Fraud Bureau, and I worked on it again in 2004 when the industry agreed to fund it. Because I used to work at the Insurance Federation, and it's great to see how the Bureau has grown in terms of its scope and everything that it accomplishes for the people of Minnesota. When we think about insurance fraud, we hear a lot about the P&C side and not as much about the life insurance side. I mean, after all, it's pretty hard to fake a death to collect insurance benefits. But where we have had the most where the Fraud Bureau has been the most invaluable to my members is where they've helped us protect seniors. So often seniors have been persuaded to cash out their annuities or their whole life policies to give to fraudsters. And once those funds and the perpetrators are gone, it's almost impossible to get them back. And the Fraud Bureau has been absolutely invaluable in helping us intervene and protect those seniors. And that's why it's critical that the Bureau continue its important insurance fraud work, and that in addition to any new resources and all the other wonderful things that they're doing, that the funding that's provided by insurers and policyholders is still devoted to protecting insurance consumers and fighting insurance fraud. The most common complaint I hear from my members when we talk about the Insurance Fraud Bureau, or the Fraud Bureau, sorry, going back to 2002, is that there simply are not enough resources to handle all the cases that insurers bring to the Bureau. And that is why we want to thank Representative Liz Lagarde for bringing this bill forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. There's no other testifiers, so we'll move to member discussion and questions. Any discussion to the bill? Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I did my math correctly, when Ms. Rowan was explaining her experience, she's about 35 or 36 years old. So my question is not for her. My question would be for the bill author or for the department. I have to apologize. I had to step out of committee. I took a phone call right after roll call. So could it just be explained where I see that the current bill before us, the funding would come from the general fund. And again, I apologize if this was already explained to the committee. Is it possible just to quickly tell us, how is the current Bureau funded? Is it the general fund or is it other fees?
Thank you, Representative Lucero. There was a discussion about that earlier, but I'll let Mr. Kelly, if he wants to quickly recap, and perhaps he can send you the slide. There it is, even.
I'll take a screenshot and then we can move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sarah. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to have some time at the end before we lay the bill over, just to kind of share some thoughts that we have as a group from the GOP side on this. And instead of maybe asking questions all the way along, if I can just maybe summarize and have some time at the end, I'd appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Well, I think no one else is seeking recognition. So I would only be turning over to Representative Lissagar after this. So I think we're at the end, Representative O'Driscoll.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I was referring to the end of the day because some of these bills have a common thread and theme to them. And we also have the OLA report and stuff. And our group of folks, as we talked about this bill, have some suggestions and ideas that we want to bring forward for consideration since it is being laid over and we're going to be considering an omnibus bill. So like I say, at the end, I just, instead of like all the way along and trying to piece this in, I just want to, you know, ask you to give me some time at the end to kind of summarize some of our thoughts.
We will certainly do that, Representative Driscoll, and come back. So there's no one else seeking recognition, as I mentioned. So Representative Listlegard, I'll give you a chance to give the last word on this popular bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and for all the individuals who testified. You know, there are some bad actors that that impact all of us. And I think putting our resources and putting our commitment to addressing this is extremely important moving forward. You heard from the testifiers the wide range of different issues that that we're facing. So I think it's a good bill. It's an important bill. I respect Representative O'Driscoll. If there's any suggestions that enhance both this bill or the other bill, I'm open to it. But this is about protecting the good players and holding accountable the bad ones. And I think that's the job of us in the Commerce Department. So I thank you for taking up this bill, and I would appreciate any support I could have moving forward.
Thank you, Representative Listlegard. And with that, we will lay that bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. We're next going to move on to a presentation from the Office of Legislative Auditor on findings related to the Commerce Fraud Bureau. And for that, we have Joel Alter, Director of Special Review from the OLA. I will just note for timing purposes, we have about 40 minutes left in this hearing, and we have three segments. So we'll ask everyone to try and be a little crisp in their remarks. Mr. Alter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joel Alter. I'm the Director of Special Reviews for the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and thank you for your time today. You're probably more familiar with other types of reviews that our office does. We do program evaluations, we do financial audits, but this third category of reports that are called special reviews, we often undertake them in response to allegations of noncompliance with state law, allegations of fraud, sometimes in response to legislative requests. Our review of the Commerce Fraud Bureau, which resulted in a report just last month, is one that we initiated when we received a complaint from the member of the public. There had been some publicity in the media about a case of alleged consumer fraud that was being prosecuted in Hennepin County. There was a company called Able Energy. It had contracted to provide solar installations to consumers, but it allegedly did not provide them. And so the Commerce Fraud Bureau did an investigation that took about a year and a half. The Bureau concluded that the company was swindling consumers, and it turned the case over to Hennepin County for prosecution. The complaint that we received questioned whether it was appropriate for the Commerce Fraud Bureau to investigate this particular case of alleged fraud, specifically whether it was within the Bureau's jurisdiction. And, you know, we all are in the business of looking at state laws. Sometimes there are murky areas of state law. I would say in this case, the law is fairly clear and explicit. The law, as you heard in the earlier presentation, limits the jurisdiction of the Commerce Fraud Bureau to, quote, offenses related to insurance fraud. The Able Energy case was a consumer scam. It was not about insurance fraud. The Commerce Fraud Bureau did look to see whether the company was providing workers' compensation coverage, and it was. All of the allegations that were turned over for prosecution were not ones that were related to insurance fraud. There have been other instances on multiple occasions where the Commerce Fraud Bureau has investigated non-insurance matters. Some of these were senior scams, cybersecurity issues, embezzlement. And I think the explanation is that the Department of Commerce sees its fraud bureau as an investigative agency of last resort. Sometimes the other state entities or local entities don't have the resources to do an investigation of scams like Able Energy. And so they come to the Fraud Bureau. And as you've heard, the Fraud Bureau has a good reputation. And so I think that the disinclination of some others or the lack of resources has caused them to turn to the Fraud Bureau to say, can you help? However, conducting non-insurance investigations has a couple of issues. Number one, it's outside the stated statutory jurisdiction of the Bureau. And secondly, as you've heard, the funding sources of the Commerce Fraud Bureau come almost entirely from insurance-related sources. And so some insurers are concerned when they see that the Commerce Fraud Bureau devotes resources, which are coming for either from assessments of insurers or assessments of consumers of insurance, when the Commerce Fraud Bureau is doing activities that are not related to insurance. So what we've suggested in our report is that the legislature has a choice. First of all, the legislature could leave the current statute as it is. And if it does that, the Commerce Fraud Bureau should operate within the boundaries of that statute and limit its investigations to insurance-related cases. The alternative to that would be for the legislature to amend the statutory jurisdiction of the Commerce Fraud Bureau. For example, it could include within the Bureau's jurisdiction activities that are within the regulatory scope of the Department of Commerce. And if the legislature took that approach, it should also consider whether there should be other funding sources for the Commerce Fraud Bureau besides those that are related to insurance. And I won't touch on a couple of other issues in the report. I think that choice is really at the heart of this report, whether to keep the statute as is and limit the Fraud Bureau to insurance-related cases or broaden the authority of the Commerce Fraud Bureau and allow it to essentially investigate a wider variety of white-collar crimes. We think it's reasonable that when these types of crimes, whether it's Able Energy or other allegations are brought forward, that there is someone who can investigate them. And I think, as was mentioned by one of the earlier testifiers, it's helpful when that person can look across counties or other jurisdictions. But we also think it's important for the Commerce Fraud Bureau to operate within the confines of the law. And so that's why we prepared this report and presented this choice to the legislature. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Alter, for your fine work and for presenting that to the committee today. Any questions for Mr. Alter? Seeing none, the next item on our agenda are, well, we now will hear about two proposals that deal with the issue that Mr. Alter has raised regarding the scope of the Commerce Fraud Bureau's jurisdiction. And the first one is not a bill yet, but it is a proposal that was included in the governor's budget. So this is the governor's proposal for the Commerce Fraud Bureau. And we have with us again, Mr. Kelly and Peter Brickwitty. And I don't know if who's gonna go first there, Mr. Kelly, if you could, I'll just turn the floor to you.
Thank you, Chair and members, and thank you to the Office of the Legislative Auditor for their work and collaboration with the department throughout the review and special report process. The document in your materials, members, that's titled LP051, is a pulled from the governor's budget for commerce. That is a policy with fiscal impact statutory change. Our budget bill for commerce is still with the reviser and has not been introduced yet, but for the purposes of this hearing was put into bill form by House Research. So thank you to them too. So the change in 450135 subdivision 2A, which speaks about the authorization and provides the authorization for the Commerce Fraud Bureau, we, in response to the recommendations of the legislative auditor, put forward in the governor's budget for commerce a change to the authorization. So there's changes where now the primary jurisdiction of the law enforcement agency is limited to offenses with a nexus to insurance-related crimes, and as is mentioned in page 19 of the report, investment fraud. They also update the sub B, which is to provide authority for the Commerce Fraud Bureau at the discretion of the commissioner and upon request by a local law enforcement agency to exercise law enforcement duties in cooperation with a law enforcement agency of jurisdiction to assist with the cases that, you know, were brought forward in as examples by Hennepin County and the Chiefs of Police Association. It also then updates accordingly the subdivision 2B duty section to line up with the changes in 2A. In addition to the change in statutory language around the department's fraud bureau authority, it also adds the governor's budget recommends one FTE from the general fund for $174,000 for a special agent to focus on these other crimes. To the point of, I won't belabor there or repeat many of the fine testimony that just happened, but we also see if the fraud bureau is going to need more resources to do this work, that it should come from the general fund. So that is a brief summary of the recommendation in the governor's budget for commerce relating to the Commerce Fraud Bureau.
Thank you, Mr. Also, Kelly.
Oh, sorry, Chair. One thing I'll also note, there were two recommendations in the OLA report. One was to change the statutory authority and the other was to establish written procedures for when there are referrals from local law enforcement. That is, we are still in the 45-day OLA window, but that is being finalized and on the commissioner's desk. So we are working quickly to go forward with both recommendations from the Commerce Fraud, for the Commerce Fraud Bureau from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. And is Mr. Brickway just available for questions or is he going to speak now as well?
I believe
Chair. Pardon me, Mr. Brickway.
Happy to answer questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Brickway. We also have available for questions. There's no public testimony signed up here, but we do have Susan Crum from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office who indicated that she'd be available for questions here as well. Representative Lislegard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can someone speak to exactly what investment fraud is?
I think that's a great question. And since I just said Mrs. Crum is available and she's a practitioner, maybe we will turn to her first. Ms. Crum.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lislegard, I will try to see if I can answer that question. And the answer is no. There isn't a crime of investment fraud under the Minnesota Criminal Code. So looking at changing the authority of the Commerce Fraud Bureau from to include nexus insurance related crimes or investment fraud, I don't believe gives us the clarification that would be helpful.
And then I know Mr. Kelly, if you want, did you have anything you wanted to add or Mr. Brickwitty to that answer? I just want to give you the opportunity.
As was stated earlier, Mr. Chair, members, when we say investment fraud, and this was language that we worked out in collaboration with the Department of Public Safety, we see that, you know, annuities and other products like that are investment products as well as insurance products. And the nexus to insurance-related crimes and investment fraud is specific to cases where they're very complex financial crime cases where they, you know, is a licensed insurance agent and they're also an investment advisor. And they're, you know, it might not be evident at the start of the case or in through the course of the investigation, but it's, you know, what is actually charged. But these are complex products that are both insurance and investment products. And so that is where that language came from. Obviously, willing to work with industry and the legislature as we work through this language. I would say that, you know, we at the department and Commissioner Arnold, we are trying to clarify, I guess we would say, the department's, the Commerce Fraud Bureau's authority rather than expand it. And, you know, the language there reflects that. So happy to work with folks as we work through this process.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly, and thank you, Ms. Crum. I don't see any additional questions as this is not yet formally in a bill form, so we don't have any official committee action to take on this proposal, but we certainly thank Mr. Kelly and Mr. Brickwitty for being here today and providing that information. The last bill on our agenda for today is House File 2845 from Representative Edelson. Representative Edelson, welcome to the Commerce Committee. I will move House File 2845 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Representative Edelson, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members.
So this is a good setup for House Bill 2845, which would give statutory authority for the Commerce Fraud Bureau to assist local police departments throughout the state in jurisdictions with financial fraud as well as auto thefts. This bill also allows that the Commissioner of Commerce would be able to use up to 25% of the automobile theft prevention account in the efforts to support these local police departments. House Bill 2845 is supported. Hopefully members were able to receive by MPPOA, as well as Minnesota Sheriff's Association, the Chiefs of Police, the County Attorneys. And Mr. Chair, I would like to then move to my first testifier, which will be my own police chief in Edina, Chief Todd Milburn.
All right, Chief Milburn, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Todd Milburn, Chief of Police for the City of Edina. I recently started here about 7 months ago, and I came here from Brooklyn Park, where I served in that city for about 29 years as in a variety of different positions in that organization. So thank you for having me here today. What I want to do in a very short period of time is just give you some overview about things that we're seeing in Edina and some things that we're seeing from a trend standpoint in the Hennepin County area as well. So first off, in the city of Edina, just to give you some background on some things that we're seeing here with the auto theft cases, in 2018, we experienced 34 reports that were filed for auto thefts. In 2021, that number jumped to 77, so that more than doubled. 2022, that trend continues for us, so I'm expecting that number to be about the same, if not more. Also, recent events that we experienced here in the city of Edina go back to the fall of 2021. We experienced several residential burglaries that involved auto thefts. We witnessed or saw suspects arriving in stolen vehicles into our neighborhoods and looking for crimes of opportunities where garage doors were open and they would proceed to steal vehicles outside of those garages. Also in the winter of 2021 and carrying over to this year, we experienced 3 carjackings in our community. In those cases, suspects arrived in previously stolen vehicles and proceeded to assault owners of vehicles while the commissions of those crimes occurred. Other nearby communities also experienced similar crimes. In response to those patterns or crimes, Edina police detectives partnered with other police departments to meet, share intelligence, and pool investigative resources together. Arrests were made and charges were filed in some of those regional cases. Reoccurring theme in nearby cities also involves the use of previously stolen vehicles, as I explained earlier. One gap that we identified through our recent experiences through the recent collaborative investigative processes was our inability to coordinate and leverage state investigative resources to aid in real-time investigators to provide resources in the field, assistance with identifying regional repeat offenders, and coordinating and preparing comprehensive multi-jurisdictional cases involving repeat offenders for criminal charging decisions. So why do we think this law enforcement support, or why does law enforcement support this bill? Carjackings and auto thefts across the metro area show no signs of slowing down. Offenders in these cases often travel across city borders and county lines, making this a regional and statewide issue. As you heard earlier, in earlier testimony, in Hennepin County alone, in 2018, there were 3,000 auto theft cases filed. That number jumped to 6,000 in 2021. Violent crime continues to increase across the metro area, and law enforcement agencies are prioritizing their investigative resources towards the most serious offenses. Some autos have also been a catalyst for other major crimes in the metro area. Many police departments are dealing with staffing shortages, along with violent crime trends. City-level resources to focus on auto theft and fraud cases are limited. Financial fraud focusing on the exploitation of seniors is another example of how state-level resources can help with these complex and regional cases. Difficult for smaller agencies and communities to investigate, particularly when we're dealing with violent crime issues, and those are quickly becoming a major priority for us. So in summary, Mr. Chair, I would just like to state and reaffirm that the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association supports this bill. And we thank Representative Edelson for her work on this important issue. And with that, I'll turn it back to you and Stan for any questions.
Thank you, Chief Milburn. I understand we also have James Francis, the mayor of South St. Paul, here to testify. Mayor Francis.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Edelson, committee members. Thank you for allowing me to speak. And for the record, my name is Jimmy Francis. I'm the mayor of what I call the center of the universe. Some call it South St. Paul, Minnesota. And in my day job, I am an insurance professional with Assured Partners. So I offer a dual perspective on why you should support this effort. Rhetorical question, but anyone know who pays when a car is stolen? Anyone? Anyone? Insurance companies. That's who pays. Auto theft is directly connected to insurance and in some cases, insurance fraud. Now, South St. Paul Police Department is an auto theft prevention program grant recipient. We've had about a total of $87,000 over a two-year cycle. And we have been a grantee for years, and it is a critical tool in our police department. It's in our toolbox that we use, and we hope to keep it there with some more authority. Local enforcement across the state need this go-to tool as well. The Commerce Fraud Bureau has been there for South St. Paul over the years, and I believe that they're a great representative for us going forward. I wrote down some notes about the OLA report that means, in my estimation, that they won't be able to help us, a city of South St. Paul, on the front end of a case unless they know that there's insurance fraud. And somehow that doesn't commute. It just doesn't make sense that in law enforcement, that we can't operate like that in 22. Criminals don't stop at our borders of our city or the county or even the jurisdiction of the state. So local law enforcement agencies need the full access tool of a state agency to help. And as an insurance agent, again, I'm fully aware of the effects of insurance fraud, higher premiums that we all pay. I know the good work of the Commerce Fraud Bureau has done over the years to curb insurance fraud and to fight crime in these areas. And the Fraud Bureau is a specialized tool that cities like ours and the state needs greater access to. So I'm just asking here and testifying today that you grant that greater authority and support this bill. I thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mayor Francis. Last, we have returning Susan Crum from the Denham County Attorney's Office. Ms. Crum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, representatives, and thank you, Representative Edelson, for bringing forth this bill. As I previously mentioned in the testimony about the previous bill, I'm a 35 years of experience as a prosecutor, and specifically I'm assigned for a financial crimes unit. I've testified and would reference that previous testimony to the professionalism and the experience of Commerce Fraud Bureau, also the importance of their partnership with other law enforcement agencies, and also the fact that they have that statewide jurisdiction. But I also want to comment on the fact that when you follow the money, the evidence that you find may lead you not just to insurance fraud or offenses related to insurance, but other crimes, as referenced, labor trafficking or the swindle of public funds. And when you have those other offenses, you need to pursue them. It's not a good use of resources to start investigating a case and then want to pass it off to another law enforcement agency. Very disruptive to victims and witnesses, and it's very important that they have that consistency. Also, when you follow the money and you're determining what offenses Commerce Fraud Bureau should investigate, does that mean that the fact that an insurer may be the victim qualifies that case for their jurisdiction? We did have a case we requested Commerce Fraud Bureau investigate where Alina was the victim. Alina clearly is a large company that has health insurance as part of their responsibilities. In that particular case, it was an executive who stole hundreds of thousands of dollars from Alina, but it wasn't through insurance fraud. It was through embezzlement. And as Mr. Alter mentioned from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, Commerce Fraud Bureau does have other cases that they investigate that are generated by their civil side. For example, there could be a licensing issue involving a broker or an insurance agent. However, their crime isn't insurance fraud. We've prosecuted a number of cases that involve financial exploitation of a vulnerable adult. The relationship between the victim and the suspect was one that originated through the fact that somebody was an insurance agent for a victim, but the crime was an insurance fraud. It seems unreasonable that the Commerce Fraud Bureau should not be able to investigate that crime that was generated by the civil side of their department. Again, and I also would want to mention that this bill is also supported by the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, and we do support the bill. And thank you for allowing me to have this moment with you to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Crum. We will now turn to member discussion and questions. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question, I suppose it would be for the bill author. As I'm looking at the bill here, I see that you're expanding the Commercial Fraud Bureau into, as we've been discussing, auto theft as part of their scope. And I was horrified when I heard Chief Milburn's comments when he said that in Hennepin County alone, carjackings and auto thefts in 2018 were 3,000, but in 2021, there's 6,000. And I'm just wondering, as we're considering this bill, expanding the scope into auto theft to combat the massive explosion in crime that's been witnessed in Minneapolis and surrounding areas, do we know what the cause of this explosive crime is and the need for having to expand the scope?
Representative Ellison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lucero, I think if we all knew what was causing it, that it would already be solved. And so the reality is this bill really is looking to try to give solutions to police departments. Many are understaffed. You know, you've heard that we have a police officer shortage. Just looking at ways that we can really help law enforcement solve what we're seeing, an uptick in. And you're right, it's really not okay what we're seeing. And I think we all collectively have to work together to solve it.
You know, and I would add to that, if I could take the liberty as the chair, to say that this is really a nationwide problem. It's not a problem that is unique to Minneapolis right now. We are seeing car thefts and carjackings explode in urbanized jurisdictions across the country. And it's sort of irrespective of both the style of governance and the amount of police officers you have in a jurisdiction. So, for example, Chicago, which has increased their police presence over the last couple of years, has seen a similar level of increase in both carjacking and auto thefts. It's happened in red states and blue states and cities with Republican mayors and Democratic mayors. This is a nationwide phenomena that's a real, real problem without easy solutions. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, and you're right. Additional law enforcement on the street is, I think, one of the answers we can do for this, which creates another conundrum, because we've seen the number of law enforcement officers in Minneapolis and St. Paul continue to go down. We've seen that, and it's compounding this problem of explosive crime that's occurring in Minneapolis and surrounding areas. But and I appreciate, Mr. Chair, and the reason I'm asking the question is, as somebody in IT, I'm consistently looking for solutions and responding to issues in IT. And I don't want to respond with treating symptoms. I'm trying to create a root cause analysis. So when I know what the root cause is, I can go after that and then solve the issue before it begins. And so responding this way is, I kind of see treating the symptom or treating the symptoms. When we need to know what the root cause analysis is so we can treat that root cause in this explosive crime increase and wave that's occurring. So I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. Any other discussion to the bill? I see Representative Driscoll has unmuted himself and gone live here. So if you'd like to speak now, that's totally fine with me, Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that all testifiers and all bills and the matter before the committee have been brought forward. As we've discussed this in our caucus, we recognize that people shouldn't be victims of fraud, and we also recognize that there needs to be balanced and appropriate resources to be able to do this. Where we may differ a little bit is what brought us here today to this discussion. The OLA report actually shines some light on the issue that the Commerce Department was using funds that were coming from insurance premiums from consumers in ways that they shouldn't have been using them. Something that I think we need to look at and take into consideration if we're going to move this forward in earnest and want to do the right thing is we need to put some guardrails around what money is going to be used and what funds are going to be used, put some additional definition and some more accountability around those funds for the auto insurance, because if we actually are collecting more money and commerce can use some of that money to do other kinds of things, and maybe we're overcharging consumers for this particular investigative need that we have. If not, then we probably need to, again, as I say, put some parameters around here so that we know what we're looking at. I'm not impugning anyone. I'm just raising some questions and some concerns that we discussed that we have as I've been visiting with other people. Secondly, I think it's also important that if there's going to be new funds and new staff that's introduced, that once again, we have clear definitions about what it is that we're going to be looking to do. The goal, the outcomes that we want these additional players that are being brought to the table to deal with fraud or to deal with the next stage of fraud or fraud that's been discovered. We have a number of agencies right now. The BCA can deal with some of these kinds of things. We also have Department of Public Safety that may be able to be dealing with some of these kinds of things. We also have, what was the other one I was saying? Oh, the Attorney General's Office is available for prosecution and some investigatory kinds of things as well. So I want to make sure that we're not duplicating things, but that we're actually using the additional dollars in a way that will help consumers firsthand with their needs. And I think one of those is making sure that we've got guardrails around the scope of what these committees are going to are, what these new positions are going to do, what this expansion is going to do, as well as guardrails around what the money is going to be able to be used for. And what generates a referral for insurance fraud to another agency, I think, is helpful as well. No one wants to be a victim of fraud. No one likes to be, well, I shouldn't say that. Some people maybe do fashion themselves as liking to do fraud, and that's why we're having this conversation today. But no one likes to be a victim of fraud. And I think that we need to continue to restore confidence in how these funds are going to be used, and the funds from the OLA report definitely need to be segregated and some guardrails put around that. And again, the second pot of money. So at the risk of continuing to repeat myself, those are the things that we would be happy to work with and think that are going to make this a much better outcome. And hopefully we can get our Senate partners to agree to something along this line as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't want to interrupt the flow of what was going on, but I did want to get on the record that we do have some concerns and we'd like to see some more of those guardrails in place. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, and I appreciate your really thoughtful comments. I would just note that, when you reference the fact that if the Commerce Department has extra money, perhaps more than they need to do the work, that maybe we need to adjust that. I guess what I would say is that I think if you listen to the comments that Mr. Cocking made and several of the other law enforcement people made, the issue isn't that there isn't enough insurance fraud for the department to investigate, and so they have this money left over, which they then go and do other things. It's more the nature of how law enforcement works, and this kind of goes to what Ms. Crum and others were saying, that the Mayor Francis of South St. Paul, that when you investigate criminal activity, sometimes you are led in directions, very frequently you are led in directions that you don't anticipate at the outset. And moving from one agency to another at that point can be very disruptive and wasteful. I certainly share and agree with you that we need to make sure that because the insurance, Commerce Fraud Bureau is largely funded by insurance fees, that insurance fraud is at the core of their mission, and that those dollars are well spent. And then if we're gonna ask the Commerce Fraud Bureau to do things outside of the insurance fraud space, that we need to have guardrails, as you put it. I would say, additional funding in the form of from the general fund to recognize that. But I certainly share your concern and look forward to working with you on it. I just think that we make a mistake if we think that we can put blinders on our law enforcement and tell them you really can only work on this one siloed area. If you had a police officer on the street and said, you are only able to enforce arson, and we wouldn't want them turning away from an auto theft or a burglary if they happened to come across it. That's just not how law enforcement works. So I share your concern about the funding source and making sure that we're doing this, and certainly wanna make sure we're all following the law. That's why we had the hearing today. I just wanted to offer that additional thought process. And you're unmuted, so if you wanted to respond to me, I would give you
I didn't know. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say that you know, within departments, you may have the beat cop who discovers something and it's turned over to an investigator or detective or others for follow-up and interviewing of witnesses and collecting of evidence for eventual prosecution. I don't need to tell you this. That is your regular gig, right? I get that. I understand that. I'm just saying that we can't use the fact that we're collecting fees from consumers as the gateway to be able to go out and fund all of these things. Its original purpose, I think, was good, is good, and still remains valuable to the consuming public. But the scope of what those funds are being used for has grown. And so if in Minnesota we believe that, which I know we do, it's rhetorical in nature, that we don't want fraud and we want to have fraud rooted out and investigated and properly prosecuted, we need to bring some state general funds forward on this or others. I don't think we can continue to say, well, we've got this money from the premiums that we're collecting and payer funded, and that's just the way we're going to do it, because that's not right. That's to put that completely on the back of people, and the plan was never designed to do that. And so I just want to make sure that we are thinking seriously and carefully about the parameters, the guardrails, and how we would proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, members, you are exactly right there at the end. And I 100% agree that if we're going to go down this road, we need to get general fund and we need to look hard at that. I agree with you 100%. Representative Edelson, sorry that Representative O'Driscoll and I had that colloquy there for a little bit, but it is your bill. So I will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. I wrote down lots of notes. I completely agree in terms of the funding, and so I just would say that this bill really does allow the BCA, the Fraud Bureau, and local law enforcement to have more ability to work together. Right now, their hands are tied in some ways, and I don't think any of us, that's our intention. I just want to also thank Mr. Cocking for all the conversations we've had in terms of guardrails as well. I tried to put them in this bill, but absolutely am open to discussion. But thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. And with that, we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. I want to thank all of our witnesses and excellent testifiers today. This, I think, was a very, very good hearing, and I appreciate everyone's time. And with that, the committee is adjourned.